Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're definitely going to talk about Beetlejuice. And who knows what else. I know what else because you texted me and I never responded to this. I did watch the first two episodes of a little Netflix show called Chaos.
Oh, man.
Have you watched the whole thing?
Oh, yes. And okay. Man, does it goes dark. Like, that fucking show. We'll get into it. We'll get into it. Yes, absolutely. I mean, we're definitely talking Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. I did want to ask you something. Something that we did talk about. So, is Jack Black officially in his video game era?
I mean, yeah, I guess. What else? I mean, it's a paycheck. It's hard to... to argue that, but like Minecraft, like at coming off of Borderlands, which was a failure, and then the success of Super Mario Brothers, like this is back to back to back.
Well, video and then game also movies. You also have to consider that those are three, and then he has an extra two in the pocket that aren't really video games but are video games. Jumanji.
Yeah, so I was going to say, like, plus the Jumanji games. So, like, this is definitely a, like, I don't know, it feels like it has to be purposeful. Like, are you not getting offers for anything else?
Well, okay, so, like, from what I understand, and I was doing some research on this, he is a huge gamer. So much so that, like, He wants his big dream is to produce and possibly direct and co-star with Pedro Pascal in a Red Dead Redemption movie.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
I've read that. I also read that he wants Pedro Pascal to be part of the next Mario Brothers movie. I guess they've got a brotherly kind of thing going on.
Exactly. And that casting is like, okay, so like we'll talk about that in a second, because that kind of like is a parallel to the Sonic, and we just got a Sonic trailer, and we'll talk about that in a second, because that's fucking wild. Like seeing the actual, like, I saw it on the big screen, and damn, that thing looks impressive. Like, I will say that much. Like,
Minecraft, it looks fun. Minecraft, yeah, are you a Minecraft guy at all?
Oh God, no!
Man. Like, I never really understood it. So I texted the trailer. I have this friend from work. This guy named Ricky, and we talk about all kinds of stuff all the time. I mentioned at some point I was like, there's a Minecraft movie coming out. How weird is that? He was like, man, they better not screw that up. I love Minecraft. And he's a little bit younger than me, but not much. Like 7 or 8 years. And I was like, I don't get Minecraft, man. Like, I never got it. I texted him the trailer when it dropped. I was like, here you go. Here's the trailer. What do you think? And like, he was like responding with like Minecraft words, like, and I'm like, it's like you're speaking Latin to me, man. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I don't get it.
No, so I was talking to somebody about it. Like, I was talking to a person much younger than me, like literally half my age, who grew up on Minecraft, right? And they made, okay, so like, it was weird because they kind of made this analogy to me that made sense. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. And he's like, but it's a much larger thing, dude. I was like, okay. I'm like, is there a purpose to the game? He's like, no, not really. Just building worlds and stuff. he made the analogy that it's like Animal Crossing, and Animal Crossing is definitely something that I have a love for. And it's just kind of like a crafting world, right? You just build shit and then you like do whatever you do in the world. I was like, okay, that makes sense. I'm like, but how do you make a fucking movie about that? And I think that they're going to go the Lego route. Like, it definitely feels like they're going to go the Lego movie route. The weirdest part to me in this whole entire trailer is we got like, okay, so we got Alien Romulus this year, right? And what's her name? Is it Carol Spinney? Her name, I think. Carol Spinney is the lead, the de facto lead in that movie. And she plays somebody youthful, but somebody Kaylee Spinney. She plays somebody youthful, but not youthful in the way that she's like 16. But in this movie, it looks like she's in the background, but she is very apparent there. I was like, that's the girl from Priscilla, and man, are they casting her young all the time? Because like it literally looks like they're like she's supposed to be like Jason Momoa's daughter or something like that. And I was like, this is some weird ass fucking casting. I mean, I'm there for the Momoa and Jack Black randomness of it all, but at the same time, I'm like, what the shit? You guys spent $250 million on a Minecraft movie, and this is what I get? Okay, let's see. Like, there's a lot of, like, it feels like there's going to be a lot of internet meme humor in it, to which I'm like, those kids in their skibbity toilet Ohio Riz, I mean, I guess they're going to love it, right? And by the way, I have seen Skibbity Toilet, and it is the most asinine thing in the world. Yeah, and I don't know.
Whatever.
I don't know why they like it. Like, I don't. Like these kids literally have brain damage. They have CTEs. They're literally
there's so much. I'm just like, I am comfortable now saying that I am definitely of the, like, I'm too old for this shit age. Like,
yep.
And maybe I'll see it and I'll have a good time with it. But like, I don't know. It's just, it might be fun. And if the people that it's meant for enjoy it, that's absolutely fine. Like, I watching the trailer, I'm like, there's nothing in there for me, but there's not also nothing in there for me to be like, this is stupid. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. It's like, it was the feeling that I had when...
Momoa's bad wig looked really funny.
Oh, yeah, it did. It really did. I got the same feeling about this the way and its response, because like you kind of go on to social media and you see these kids and they're fucking flipping out for it. It's like the same way I felt about when I saw the live action trailer for One Piece, and I was like, what the hell is this? And I'm used to anime, and then I went into the fucking comments and it was like a cult. It was like, oh, I'm just not a part of this cult. I mean, you know. And that's the thing with Minecraft is that it's been around for, what, 20 years now?
Which is bizarre to me. Like, it still feels like something, like, so young-ish.
And it is.
Minecraft's been around forever.
I one of my, I'm, like, you know how, like, you're an uncle but not an uncle to some kids? Yeah.
Very much so.
I'm like a pair of kids that me and my wife have been friends with for, she's been friends with Talia, one of her girlfriends for shit, like 20 years. And so, like, I'm an uncle, right? Uncle Adam. And, I got them a Switch. And you know what the first thing that he did was? Little Logan.
Minecraft?
Yep. Like, downloaded Minecraft and instantly knew how to do it. And then, like, he somehow hacked his fucking Wii so that he could watch YouTube videos at the same time and toggle back and forth so that he could start building worlds. I was like, how do you instantly know this shit?
When I first started working at the job I work at now, 8 years ago, when I started working there, I worked with this guy named Daniel, who he was a lot younger than me, but you know, I mean, still older guy. He was in his, I think he was probably 30 at the time. And he loved Minecraft. He built, he was so happy to show me this video, and I was like, I don't get it, man. He built a scale replica of the Titanic in Minecraft. Fully, like, you could go into it, like, everything.
How do you have the time to do that?
That's what I said. I was like, how do you have time to do this, man? He was like, it's what I do to relax. I was like, this feels tedious and annoying.
Yeah.
I'm like, and what do you do with it when you're done? He was like, nothing. It just sits here. I was like, why? But why? Why do, like, you do it to do it? I guess it's no different than model making. But, yes. Like, it feels different, you know? And, like, I don't want to be the old man, you know, shaking his fist at a cloud. But, like, it feels like that. But also, I feel justified in just being like, this feels like a massive waste of time. It's all a waste of time. Video games are a waste of, it's what we're doing. We're wasting time.
Yes, exactly.
But this specific thing just feels asinine to me. I mean, it's no different than building Legos and just being like, hey, I put this together. Like, for what reason? To show it to people? Okay. But it still just feels really, really weird. But, like, I say that and then immediately want to be like, but that fucking Sonic trailer has me so hyped.
I know. It really does. Like, I told you, like, I think I told you offline. I think I texted you, like, when I saw the trailer, like, just on the video, I was like, okay, this is the first Sonic movie I'm going to probably see in the theater. Oh, well, no, I know I'm going to see it in the theater. When I saw the trailer on IMAX last night, I was like, holy shit. Like, they got it right. Like, they got, at this point, like, I've been inactively watching, and then by the time that Knuckles came around, I was like, okay, this is fun. I like this. This is clever. And then the trailer hit, and it was like, it's good. It's good. It looks good. It looks like it's going to be, like, it finally, like, there's sometimes where series is, like, start off low-key, and then they slowly rise, and then they go beyond the audience that it was intended for and become something else. And I feel like Sonic 3 with Keanu, Idris Elba, and Ben Schwartz, like, they're the flavor that they're playing, and then Jim Carrey coming back in, like, I don't even know. Like, it's like he just decided to go, oh, kids don't know me, so hold my beer while I go ahead and show kids what, like, you know, what my era was like, you know, and just kind of like, and he's got two characters in this fucking movie, right? Yeah. He's playing Papa, and he's playing his original role. It just looks.
So much fun, man. Like, yeah, I have so much fun with those movies. I know we talked about Knuckles when it aired earlier this year, and, like, it was goofy, but, like, just, it was just fun. You know? Like, there's something to be said for, like, this innocuous, like, kind of, not inoffensive in a way where it's like they're actively trying to not be offensive, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
It's just, it's not dumbed down kiddie, like to the point of, like, you know, preschool kind of stupid, but just fun, goofy shit. And, you know, like, we don't have a lot of that, mostly because that stuff kind of stopped making money, so they just stopped making it, or making the kind of money that superhero movies were making. So they just kind of stopped doing it. And, like, we have Dominion stuff, which was making, or still is making bank. But, like, it's not the same to me. Like, it doesn't... Like, those first two Despicable Me movies are pretty good. But, like, after that, it just feels like the same shit, and it gets dumber and dumber, and there's, like, no intelligence to it at all.
None whatsoever. Like, it just... It's like... Well, they use the same formula over and over again. Like, I saw, but here's the weird part. So, like, I saw, I don't know if I told you, I saw Despicable Me in the theaters. Like, for, again, I'm glad I'm being, like, it's so weird. Like, I never talk about kids that are in my life, and people would probably think that I'm some kind of weird ass, like, dude who doesn't go see anybody or talk about anything, or, like, just stays in his, like, fucking house.
That's what I've become.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's basically what I do, but then my wife drags my ass out because, you know, as she says, she's like, you're very charming when you're outside. Like, kids love you. And I'm like, I don't know about that. I terrorize kids. Not in the bad.
Kids like to be scared, man.
Seriously. So we went to this birthday party where they had it at a movie theater, and the movie that they were watching was Despicable Me 4. Bro, I have to tell, as soon as those stupid little French yellow pills came up and la 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 illumination, the kids shut up and were literally staring at the screen. Like,
I don't know what it is, man. Man, like, I enjoy the first two. I think Despicable Me 2 is a really good movie, but
it's great. Like, I love the music. I love what Pharrell does.
It's just like, yeah.
It goes downhill. Like, it's so much so that the first Minions movie, like...
I fell asleep in the theater. I took my nieces to go see it because they were so excited for it. I fell asleep in the theater, man.
Well, did you watch the first, like, 10 minutes of it and how there's the Hitler cameo in it?
Yeah, it's fucking weird, man. Holy shit,
that's fucking wild. And, like, it's just so fucking weird. But then you've got people like Sandra Bullock coming in, like, in that movie. And, like, actually starring in it, and you're like, Sandra Bullock? And it all goes to, like, the whole thing of, like, kids love these movies, and they want to be a part of it, because then you're like Jack Black.
You have kids. All these people have kids, and some even grandkids, that they want to be able to show, like, here's a movie that I'm in that you can watch.
Yeah, exactly. But it's wild, like, okay, so, like, here's the thing for me. Was Minecraft something that Warner Brothers gave to Momoa as an apology? Or,
I mean, maybe. Momoa's a strange guy, so.
He really. Yes,
like,
but in the best way possible.
Yeah, like Joe Manganiello. Like,
Manganiello.
Yeah, like, he's a weird guy, but, like, not in a creepy way, just in a, like, this guy's into shit that you would not expect him to be into. Like, and Momoa's, like, he's a tough guy, but he's also not a tough guy. Like, he's just a total sweetheart of a dude, too. So, like, I don't know. He might sit at home playing Minecraft with, like, his kids in his neighborhood. I wouldn't put that past, like, him, you know? Yeah. So,
like, this is the dude that, like, for, what, 15 years dated, God, who's Zoe Kravitz? Like, he was Zoe Kravitz's stepdad for the longest time.
Yeah,
Lisa Bonet. Though, okay, so, like, when you think about it, she's much older than him, but then when you see Lisa Bonet, you're like, absolutely.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, it's just like Channing Tatum locking down. Lisa Bonet. So, it's just like Channing Tatum's locking down Zoe Kravitz. It's like, yeah, of course you're going to lock her down. Of course you're going to be, like, subservient simp to her, because, like, she's barely, like, she's not even in her 30s yet. I mean, she's going to be, like, for the next 25 years, she's just going to be like her mom. Like, but also, like, imagine being your two dads. Like, I want that comedy show. My Two Dads starring
Lenny Kravitz and Jason Momoa. Oh my god, man.
Of course you end up like,
and then they get along on top of that, which is so much weirder. It's like, and also they're cool with each other at like, it's, I mean, good for all of them. Like, like for being just adults about things and not having, if there is drama, it doesn't spill out into the press. And Zoe Kravitz, did you get a chance to see that movie?
I have not yet, but it's on my list because
I've seen the trailer and I'm not really a horror movie guy. So I guess maybe it's more like psychological horror. Mm-hmm. So it might be up my alley, but that trailer's fucking weird, man.
Man, it's wild. But everything I've heard from everybody that has seen it is that if Zoe Kravitz wants it, she'll have a career as a director. Like, almost
Channing
like
Tatum as like creepy bad guy. Like, I'm kind of in to see how that plays out.
Exactly, with weird with the weird blonde beard. Like, it just like looks like dirt patches on his face. Okay, I'm here for it. Like talk about another dude who's like reinvented himself like 20 times. Like Channing Tatum, like I really do. Like, it's weird because this is
the guy who like broke out big with a hip hop dance movie
Step Up, and then created himself as a superstar with his biography of him being a hustler. Like, it's a wild story. Like, when you read into Channing
and then
Tatum,
is in with like all of like Will Ferrell and all those guys to a degree. It's bizarre, man. Like, right? To me, and maybe I'm wrong, it probably speaks a lot, just like Jason Momoa, it speaks a lot to like what kind of person he actually is, and that he's like in all of these like disparate little groups. Like, he just
absolutely
is friendly with everybody. And by all accounts, like, the movie seems, if it's not doing like box office well, it's being received well. So like that's a big plus for her. So
yes, no, actually it's making money. It's the first Amazon MGM movie to turn into a profit this weekend. Like, it's going to make anywhere between, like, they're saying it's going to make anywhere between 50 and 60 million at the end of its run. But that's also, like, before.
Meanwhile, The Crow isn't even playing in a theater near me anymore.
No, it's not. It's not even, it hasn't even been released. I was expecting it to be released digitally this week. But, like, a la Borderlands, I mean, Lionsgate can't win at this point. You know. Or, like, it's just, it's wild to see how, like, what I'm loving is that, like, we're in this era right now where we don't really know what's going to connect with audiences. And so it's kind of like I was thinking about it in my head, we're at a point right now where we're not only getting recycled stuff from the 80s and 90s, and it feels like the 80s and 90s, but, like, the weirdness of like what was released and what was a hit in the 80s and 90s is kind of come back. Like, there's the things that are always going to be hits, right? Like Wolverine, Deadpool, Wolverine, like that's going to be a hit. Like, no way, no if, no ands, no buts about it. It's going to be a hit. But you get things like Blink Twice, which like 5 years ago, that shit would have been on Netflix, right? But it's not. It's getting released in theaters and it's actually doing well. But then you get something like Borderlands, which 2 years ago probably would have been a hit, right?
Yeah.
Nothing. Crickets. And it just, like, it's wild to me that, like, we're getting, it almost feels like we're getting back to smaller movies, but we're getting an influx of movies that are at the ground level. Like, even Deadpool and Wolverine, like, you know, it's like, it like other like with that and Inside Out 2 are the biggest movies of the summer, right? But they're both like weirdly
Inside Out 2 is like, now the biggest animated film of all time, right? Worldwide. Yep.
Yes, it is.
That's
now
fucking
the biggest.
Insane. I still haven't seen it. I don't know if I can see it.
Like, you're gonna have to, like, having our conversations, it's going to be something that you're going to have to watch on Disney Plus in sections. Yeah. Because even then, like, even with me watching it in the theater, like I had, like, there were certain sections I had a really tough time with. Like, it's like a kid horror film, but also the most delightfully charming kid horror film ever, because it kind of, like, it does this thing of, like, dealing with anxiety, but also explaining to kids in the most beautiful, wonderful, simple way what anxiety is and how anxiety can capture you, right? But, I mean, okay, so, but, like, these two movies are not, like, they're not about saving the world. They're about saving people, right? And, like, they're not like the Avengers Endgame archetype of, like, saving the universe.
Yeah, I think that's one of, so I've now seen Deadpool Wolverine 4 times. Mm-hmm. I saw it again at some point.
you can't even remember.
And, you know, that's one of the things. I'm also, 4 times is apparently also the point where I start spotting, like, errors,
deep references.
Continuity errors. We're like, well, that thing wasn't there a minute ago. Like, this person was on the far left and are in the middle, and now they're on the far left. Like, I started spotting that stuff. So maybe 4 times in the theater is too many. But it still was very enjoyable. But, you know, your brain starts looking for other things. But one of the things I did, even though, like, if you think too much about that plot, and we talked about it when we talked about the movie, like, a lot of it is just kind of nonsense. But the idea that it was about saving his timeline to a degree, but and not letting it get destroyed by this guy. But it was ultimately about saving himself, at like getting himself back, like, showing this version of Wolverine, like, that, you know, your loss and your grief doesn't have to define you. Like, you can come out of that. Like, there's like, it's a lot of surface level shit, but there is some underlying deep shit in that movie that you know, they don't even really talk about, you know. Like,
no, they really
address on a surface level, but it's still there. And, like, that's one of the things I appreciate. Like, yes, Avengers Endgame has to be what it is. But, like a movie like Winter Soldier, like, is what it is. But it's also this, like, exploration of, like, dealing with this friendship that, you know, is very, very complicated, you know.
Absolutely. And what you're willing to do for a friend,
right?
Like, you know, like it's at its core, it's a human story set upon a stage that's gigantic, and that's what I love. Like, that's my, like, sense, like, and like,
honestly, I think that's kind of what Marvel had lost in the last few years.
It really, like, did. No, you're absolutely right.
Hitting those specific beats, like, Shang-Chi is a very enjoyable movie, but I don't think it lands the father-son complicated, like, thing in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. It's very, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, it almost feels like it's two drafts away from it.
Yeah.
Like, what it was looking for. Like, you know, whatever that was, the it that they were looking for, which I think that you're right. It was that. I mean, but that's my sweet spot. Like, you know, with genre films, like, it's, yeah, if you're going to go big, give me a big stage, but give me a human story. Like, it's the way that I function since I was a kid. It's like when your mind gets melted by Die Hard as a kid, like
what, it's big, but like it's still the story of this guy who's trying to get home to his kids, to his wife.
And, yeah, and save his wife, both, like, save his wife and save his marriage. But save his marriage, like, ultimately, that's what he's doing. Like, you know, I think that people don't get that about the movie, is that, like, I know people that fast forward the first 30 minutes, and I'm like, you're a fucking asshole if you do that. You are an asshole. Whenever you watch
that, that's so good, man. Like, that's it's so much, it's such good setup. And, like, that's, I want to talk about that when we get to Beetlejuice. but yeah, like, good setup. So I want to hit you with a couple of things that I have been watching that we haven't texted about. I watched the first episode of FX's new kind of comedy show, English teacher.
Yes. Okay. So I wanted to stay away from it because, I wasn't sure if it was going to be my type of thing because of, I don't even know how to put it. It looks very kind of cringy, as the kids say.
There is some cringe to it, but it's not at the level I was worried it was going to be. Okay. Curb Your Enthusiasm is too much cringe for me. Like, most of the time I can't do Curb. Like, I can try to watch it, but most episodes of Curb I've watched, I can get about 5 or 6 minutes in and I'm like, it's too much. Like, it's too much uncomfortable shit. This is not even at the level of Curb.
Okay.
So if you can watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, this would be a breeze. I only watched the first episode and it's really good, but it's not as funny as I hoped it would be.
So, like, okay, so the standard for me, and it goes back to, like, there was something I was going to actually ask you about and how excited you are. So the standard for school-based comedies, and I know I just talked about how I don't like cringe, but there's a certain kind of cringe I love, is Vice Principals. That to me is like the funniest fucking show in the world. I think partially because is Danny McBride and Walton Goggins, right? Like, on the level, like, of saying, like, I feel like that's like the best, like, other than Abbott, right? Like, Abbott. Like, what's the level? Like, what's the level compared to Abbott? Like,
okay, so I was gonna ask you also, did you ever watch the one what's his name, Glenn Howerton, where he's the teacher?
Yes. Okay. I did see like two episodes of that. Wasn't it on Fox? Isn't it always on Fox where they do these shows that never materialize? But yes,
maybe. I can't remember when it was on. I know that the last season was streaming only. But like, I mostly enjoyed the first season or two of that show. Kind of lost me by the end, but like, that was a level of like, this guy is a shitty teacher and these students are smarter than him, but they were also in high school. And then Abbott is such a like feel good, friendly, like wholesome show. Mm-hmm. And like, I can't remember the name of the Glenn Howerton show, AP Bio. Vice Principals kind of is more towards the AP Bio thing, maybe even a little, well, definitely more extreme. But it didn't have as much to deal with the students. This is like this comfortable middle of all of that. Like, it does not have the like wholesome feel good stuff that
Abbott has. Okay, so it's basically like if Abbott didn't have those like feel good like intentions. It's almost like a cynical app.
Well, so the first episode, the teacher, the English teacher in question, he is a he's an out gay man.
Okay.
And so he gets informed by his principal, played by God, Veronica Mars's dad. I can never remember.
Oh,
his name.
Ennio. Oh God.
That guy.
yeah, Enrico Colatanoni, I think is his name. But yes, I know who you're talking.
Who's great? I love him. But he gets the teacher gets informed that he's being investigated because in the previous year he had kissed his boyfriend who was also a teacher there in front of students. And so like this mom was now pressing charges, but come to find out that like the mom was pressing charges because her son had come out as gay. So the mom was convinced that her son became gay because he saw two men kiss. But like it's so, I mean, not to spoil anything, but like he keeps maintaining that the kiss was like a very innocuous, like peck on the lips. And then like they replay the event. Like he remembers, like they chose him like sitting there thinking about it, and it is not that. Like it's very
like tongue and everything.
Yeah, yeah. It was a little probably a little too much to be doing in front of like at a high school. Like PDA like that in front of kids.
Yeah.
Gay or not, is like you should not be doing that.
Exactly.
So like it's got that like this woman is definitely a piece of shit for what she's doing, but also like his, and it was when they show it, it's like initiated by his boyfriend and he just kind of like leans into it. And so it's like, it's this complicated thing. But it's a good show. It's just not, it's not at the funny of like AP Bio and Vice Principals,
where
it's like that zany, ridiculous comedy kind of thing, and it's not at the like heartfelt level of Abbott. It's just somewhere in the middle.
So basically, what you're saying is that all the critics are going to love this, and they're going to get all the Emmys for this.
I mean, maybe. Like I've only seen one episode. I don't. But like, if it maintains like that thing. Yeah, it could be in that level.
Okay. I'm probably not going to watch this just because like I just don't have any kind of like it has to do with the fact that I just don't need more cringe. I don't need like the reality of kids and bullshit today. Like again, Scooby-Doo toilet. Fuck it. I don't care. I literally do not care. I mean, I'm glad for this guy. Like he's actually, what's his name? Brian Alvarez. He's definitely been hanging around, like, and to get his own series and he's controlling the narrative on this. Great. I'm glad. But there's just so much content out there. And if it's not something like I know this sounds weird, but if it's not something like the level of Abbott, I don't know if I have the tolerance for it.
Yeah, like I don't think it's got the quality that Abbott has. So at least not yet. Yeah. Like I said, I'm one episode in, and like I think it's okay. I don't think it's fantastic. So
I mean, like the weird part about Abbott is that it like out the gate that pilot is so fucking good.
Yeah,
it's so good. Like. And you kind of need that nowadays, like especially with something that's going to be a vertical and streaming series, like mostly vertical, like you kind of need to come out the gate as like gangbusters, like this is perfectly formed. And it sounds like this one is going to be like, it might be one of those things where it gets shaped in the first season to like get elevated in the next season. And maybe I'll check it out after a couple of seasons, but not right. Like, I don't know, like, there's just too much going on. Like, I saw the problem is that the trailer is selling it like a cringe show. And when did we become this this place that loves cringe comedy. Like, where's just like, why is Abbott such a weird like anomaly? And people write about it. Like, what? How does it do this feel good thing? This is the shit that we used to do all the time.
Yeah,
we used to have.
Well, that's the thing about Abbott, right? It has its cringe moments, but like, it always has the redemption of that.
Yes, there's no redemption in a lot of these cringe shows, right? It's just a deep dive into cringe, right? And I blame, you know what I blame? Like going back to Glenn Howerton, I blame It's Always Sunny. I blame the assholes that.
I mean, it's why I stopped watching Always Sunny. I couldn't. Yeah. Like, I'm like, these, like, it's fun sometimes, but like, these are the most despicable people, man. And there's never any comeuppance. Like, in Seinfeld, like, their rule was like, these people are not good people and they never learn a lesson, but they do pay a price.
Always pay a price. And that's what made Seinfeld so watchable, was because you literally, like, I loved to hate these people. These people were like that group of friends that you were like, I fucking hate these people, but I always hang around with them because I have no choice.
Yeah.
They were like, like what I like to call my college friends. Like my college friends, I don't talk to any of my college friends because fuck them, because they were the worst trash people in the world. And I was probably trash, because that's what you are in your 20s. You're trash, right? Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But like, it's like being around, like Always Sunny is like being around them all the time, but not seeing them get smacked when they talk shit. Because I've seen so many people get smacked for like thinking that they were tough guys and talking shit. And just not even getting hit, but getting smacked by somebody. Like, and just like, I'm not saying that everybody needs to be smacked, and just like smacked down by the fates. And you playing this whole thing of like, it just goes to like, to me, it goes to more of what Jerry is than David is, right? Like in Seinfeld. Like, yeah. Larry always wrote the worst possible like behavior. But Jerry would always come in and make sure that everything was like on the other end. Oh, we want to show this aberrant behavior. We're going to make sure that you're not going to get learned a lesson. You won't get a lesson learned, but you will definitely pay for your transgressions. Like that, I feel like, was the Jerry part of it. Larry was always like, and you could tell in Curb, it's all like, just like Always Sunny, it's all just aberrant cringe behavior. And there's no come up. Like, literally, there's sometimes where he goes, like, you know, people go, Larry fucking David, fuck you. But I mean, that's just not enough, right? Like, but anywho, keep me informed if you're going to watch
it. Yeah, I'm probably good. I think the first season's only like 5 or 6 episodes. So I'm probably going to at least watch the first season. It didn't feel like a huge time commitment. So
it's like, 22 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm in for it to see like how well they can kind of balance everything. The only other thing I watched is, like I said before, is you told me to watch Chaos, and I made it through the first 2 episodes. Unfortunately, I didn't have enough time because NFL started this week. So I didn't have enough time to binge the entire show, but I did watch the first 2 episodes. And like, I don't think we ever discussed this. Did you watch The End of the Fucking World?
So I started watching it. And I don't know why, but I got like 4 episodes in and I stopped watching it. It wasn't because of anything like that, the quality, because I really liked what the creator, Charlie Koppel was doing with the show. Like it was like, I watched a part of the first season, and then I know that there's a second season. You know, it was hard for me because like what people don't know is it's about a kid who thinks he's a, like who believes he's like a like like serial killer, a psychopath, and he kills animals as a hobby. And that was really hard for me because you know how I feel about animals.
Yeah.
But the way that Covell like adapted, I guess it's a book, I think.
Yeah, it's a graphic novel.
Yeah. Like it was very interesting for me, enough to where I was like, I watched a couple, I think I watched 4 episodes of the first season, but it just something happened where I was like, I don't know what happened. I stopped watching. But she's the showrunner creator for Chaos. And it very much so feels like her and the dark nature at which she deals with.
Yeah. I'm so fucking impressed with this show after only 2 episodes. I love mythology.
Yes.
I'm not like schooled in it, but I love mythology. I mean, one of my first film loves is Ray Harryhausen's Clash of the Titans.
So the Titans, like, yes.
I love that shit. And it was because we didn't have like it was like an extension of my comic book shit, you know?
Yes.
Like, oh, these great, they're superheroes, you know? So like I would get, you know, as into it as I could. You know, so this idea of retelling these myths, but having them set in a modern day setting, it's so intriguing. And the way they world build without like really getting into the world building is fascinating.
Oh man, wait till you go deeper into Hades. Like, wow.
I'm so in for that. Like it's so weird because we see similar stuff in Beetlejuice, but mm-hmm. the idea of like how they cross over and like the coin and like it's so fucking fascinating to like really play all of that out. And like you know, when you read the myths of like, oh, they buried people with a coin in their mouth so that they could pay the toll to the ferryman to take them to the other side. Like, that sounds ridiculous. But then when you play it out the way they play it out, it's fucking heartbreaking.
Yes. So heartbreaking, because when you find out what, like these things are very kind of like, they're like the first season deals with like the Orpheus story. And Orpheus going into the underworld and to find Eurysides, his muse. But the way that they transmorph it and make it modern and how selfish everybody is kind of brilliant. Like, I know that I talked about terrible characters doing terrible things.
It's so nice to have like Zeus, Disney-fied Zeus. Is such fucking like ruse, like to have Zeus play out like this vain, shitty fuckhead that he actually is, and it's Jeff Goldblum. It's great. It's so great. In the second episode when he goes to visit like the one of the people he's sleeping with and trying to have a baby with, and
yes,
he's already there. And you're like, what is happening? And then it's Hera. And like, it's so good to, and then they get into this like bickering fight of a married couple while also torturing this woman who he's been having an affair with, and just completely disregard her altogether. Like, Zeus does not give a shit about her.
No, like, has no care. Only cares about the child that she's holding, literally.
And it's so accurate. And like, you know, I'm if this show were more popular, there'd be a lot of people talking about what a great guy Zeus is. You know, like they do with Homelander.
Oh God, so. Yes. Well, okay, so like this does, okay, so like I'm going to tell you something so that you're prepared for it, because I was not prepared for this. This goes from 0 to 60 in the dark very quickly, like quicker than what, like what you've seen. There's a midway point, like inflection point that happens that turns Zeus into Homelander from this year. So like they don't spend time joking around, making like all the tit milk joke bullshit that they did, that Eric Kripke did, like that he was circling the dream. Like it's almost like Charlie saw this, like saw the boys and went, I maybe my show should actually not circle the drain so much and just instantly go into, this is a piece of shit. And you think is a piece of shit for the first two episodes. Hold my beer. Wait till we get into deeper into the series. And then you're going to see what the gods are really like and how deep and demented these stories are. It's wild. He does, like, I feel like Goldblum is doing his own riff on a very certain corrupt politician. And it's just the slightest bit of it, but it's just enough to make it feel like it's a modern interpretation of what we feel as a figurehead. Because, I mean, they're essentially, it's like, it is, but it isn't. It's like this weird thing where, I love that it's so, like, his ego is so fragile. Like, even in the first opening.
Yeah, like, he's so obsessed with that fucking wrinkle on his forehead, man.
Oh, God, yes. Well, that, and then the whatchamacallit, the forever, the circle, the infinite circle.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He just stands there and watches it.
Yep, because he saw a crick in it. Like, you know, he saw a crick in it. And what I loved is that final moment at the end of at the first episode where it's sitting on there and you're like, why the fuck? Oh, okay. Now I get why. Like it wasn't that it was all in his head. Like, can we talk a moment about how, like, what I loved is that you cast Jeff Goldblum, who's in his 70s, and the whole thing would be, if this was any other filmmaker, like other than Charlie Koval, you would have cast somebody much younger and, dare I say, sexy or whatever you want to call it, some model or influencer. That was
Goldblum,
like,
has that like perfect mix of like he is sexy but also creepy and dangerous, and like it's just this perfect mixture of what that character needs to be.
And then you get Janet McTeer to play Hera and you go against type again. Like, you give a woman that's in her like mid to late 50s, and then you get Cliff Curtis to play Poseidon.
She's actually 63.
She's 60. Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yeah. She's fucking gorgeous, man.
And the way that she plays Hera, like, and the fact that, like, this is how you can tell that a woman is writing the show, like, how freely sexual she is, and how, like, she's never made to be the villain, even though she's sleeping with two men. And
the thing with that, she turns her into a bee and then takes her to her fucking...
Yes! To her beehive.
So great, man. Did you watch The Old Man? Which is coming back for season two soon.
Yes.
Yeah, she was in The Old Man. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, she was.
And she was great in that.
Oh, God, yes. And then, but like Cliff Curtis is Poseidon. Have you gotten to Poseidon?
I haven't gotten to Poseidon yet. I'm excited to see him as Poseidon, and because I looked up to see who else was in the cast.
Yes.
And I know he's showing up as Poseidon, and David Thewlis.
Thewlis is Hades.
Yeah, I'm excited for those two.
My favorite bit of casting though is, wait till you see who the Furies are. The Fates.
Okay.
Have you gotten to the Fates yet?
Wait, no. That's where I'm going to. The Fates, yeah. Because they're at the club, right?
Yes, okay.
Yeah, Eddie Izzard.
Susie Eddie Izzard now.
Yeah.
He officially changed his name. It's actually credited in there. Like, that's the kind of, like, brilliant casting I could not believe. Wait till you get to the Furies. Like, the Furies are, like, it's just... It's wonderful casting, but like it's a combination of people that you know, like Stephen Delaney as Prometheus. I didn't know I needed more Stephen Delaney, but Jesus Christ, give me more Stephen Delaney and give me Stephen Delaney narrating things, because
he's so good.
He's so fucking good. And it's like, it's the exact witty tone that you want, but it also has like this weird inflection of like, the Arrested Development, like Ron Howard.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Like it has like that. No, he didn't. And no, and we'll show you that
this
later.
This is Stannis Baratheon, man. Like, yes! It's so baffling to me to watch this guy be so kind of coy and cloying and smarmy, and but like likable, and he's all so in red, so good.
Yeah, seriously, and all in red short shorts. Like the one thing I took away from this also is that, God damn, is this show stylish. Like, I want to wear everything Jeff Goldblum wears on a vacation to Italy. Like, that's all I want to do, is like just roam around like Jeff Goldblum. Like, the way he moves in this show, I feel like almost like if anybody wore those clothes, those Gucci sweatpants suits, you would sashay around the way that fucking Goldblum does, though only Goldblum could do it. It's like, it's an amazing piece of work, and like, I don't know how much money they put into it or how much of it is
the
just
fucking music really budget smart. Has to be insane. There are right? more like recognizable needle drops in the first episode than like maybe every movie I've seen this year.
Yeah.
Like, I don't There's know what the music lot. Budget for this show is, but it's insane.
Mm-hmm. I do have to say, like, the casting of Orpheus and Riddhi, like Aurora Perot and Killian Scott.
I think they're great.
They are so good. And it gets so much better.
I was worried, like, the first few minutes, I was like, oh, this is like an annoying yuppie couple. And I am not in for this, man. Like, but like the way it's narrated and the way everything starts to play out, I got really mm-hmm. invested. I will say the one casting/character that I am just not into, and I know he's played a big part and he's going to continue to play a big part, is, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but Dionysus Naban Rizwan. I'm just not. Like, it's not getting me. Like, it's not that I think he's doing a bad job. He's doing exactly what he's supposed to do. But I'm just like, mm-hmm. I do not care about this character, man. Like, I the most fun I've had with him in two episodes is when they go to the club. And, like, that's only because of not connection, but them two together, like playing off each other, is kind of fun. Yeah.
Wait, like he gets okay. So, like, first off, the weirdest part about that is I don't know how. Like, I don't know what happened, but like, he literally he looks like what Jeff Goldblum would have as a son if he had dated a woman of a certain type.
Oh yeah, like, he definitely looks like he could be Jeff Goldblum's son.
and he kind of acts like a young Jeff Goldblum, this kind of like, duh, 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 duh. Like, I'm like, you know, I'm fluid, I'm this, I'm this, I'm all over the place. Give it a little bit of time. Like, I felt the same way. I was like, what the fuck, this Wile E. Coyote or this fucking Bugs Bunny character. But then some things happen and things start getting adjusted, and yeah, it's definitely one of those things where you watch it and it won't be like, if you don't like him, it may not be that you like him, but it will be where you'll be like, okay, I see his piece here and I'm definitely for this. It's a piece of work. Like, I was like, we had started Umbrella Academy. I still haven't finished it. And part of the reason is because of this show. We went so quickly and deeply into this because it instantly hooks you. Right, like by the end, when you see Rizzy's, when you see Riddhi, like, spoilers, guys. I mean, of course, we're nerds learning everything. When she dies, like, it hooks you, and it makes you want to watch the next episode and then the next episode after that. And like,
oh, and Debbie Mazar, yeah. Yeah, as fucking Medusa, like that shit. Like, I mean, it says she's in 6 episodes, so I'm assuming there's a lot more of her, but she's so great. I love her, man. I love her.
There's a moment with her. I don't think you've gotten to it. There's a moment with her, and a reveal, and then somebody does something, and her response to that is one of the funniest fucking things that I've seen all year. And we had to stop it because I was laughing so hard.
Is it when she asked her, "Are you that Medusa?" and she showed the snakes?
Yes.
And she goes, "Why didn't I turn to stone?" And she says, "Cause you're fucking dead
dumbass."
that got me, man. I was just like, that was so funny. Why did I turn to stone? Cause you're fucking dead.
Hey, dumbass. I do love that kind of sense of humor that it brings to everything.
Yeah.
Like, it's this whole thing of like, what are you doing? Shut up. It's that kind of sense of humor that's like, it's semi-sarcastic, but it's more of like, no, this is not that. Just get over yourself. That I fucking love. Like, and the show has it even in its darkest moments, and it gets fucking dark, dude. I'm gonna be real with you. There's a certain couple of moments that you just go, whoa, okay, I wasn't expecting it to go Game of Thrones red wedding, and it does. Later in the series, but it's all for a purpose, right?
I hope that they're going to get more money and do more. Like, it seems to be doing fairly well for Netflix. Like, that's how it popped up. But, like, it was on my radar before you texted me, because popped up as one of the, like, either like Netflix recommends or new or for you or whatever. And I read, I was like, oh, Jeff Goldblum. And I read the like synopsis. I was like, oh, I love mythology. Add it to my list. And then a buddy of mine, he posted on his social media that he was watching it and digging it. And then the next day you texted me. I was like, okay, well, I got to watch this fucking show now. And I got 2 episodes in, and I was just like, yeah, this is fantastic, man.
I will say this, like certain Netflix shows, I think this is a grower. I don't think it's been on people's radar, and as soon as like people, you and I and like your friend, like we just start kind of like talking to people about it. I mean, even my wife, like, I mean, she, that's the reason why we watched it, is because she's like, her celebrity crush is Jeff Goldblum. Like, since childhood. I mean, I guess like many women, Jurassic Park changed her life. you know what scene I'm fucking talking about.
I mean, there's a pop of shirtless Jeff Goldblum. So.
But I will say this much. This is the most awake, focused, and actorly Jeff Goldblum has been.
In a
long while, like I'd say 20 years. Like, I haven't seen him do something like this where it's not a wink and a nod, like, in a long time. This is like Jeff Goldblum from like The Fly. Like, that's how serious. Yeah. It's very kind of like, even when he's joking, it's not like a wink and a nod. It's like, I'm playing fucking Zeus.
It's nice to see him not just doing a version of Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, this is not Jeff Goldblum. This is fucking Zeus. Like, and my favorite part about this show is the and you'll see more of it, is the relationship between him and Prometheus. Like, that is like the...
there's this scene, I think it's in the second episode. Like, he keeps bringing him to him to talk to him and then sending him back. But, like, he sends him away. It might have been the first episode. And then he goes on this, like tangent to nobody about how that's his best friend, and it's just like, but you're torturing him endlessly,
like, yes,
and you can't like pull your head out of your ass to like, but also you think he's your best friend and he's definitely lying to you. So
yeah, like, you're so blinded, you're so arrogant to think that that he didn't set up. Like, my favorite part is when you start realizing the plan that Prometheus has had and the centuries it's taken and what happens and what they have to do in order to enact the plan, it's so much so of Greek mythology. It smelled like, my favorite part is that they don't shy away from the fact that Hera and Zeus are brother and sister.
Yeah.
They don't shy away from that at any moment. Like, they don't shy away from, like, all of the worst parts of, like, both the gods and the humanity. And, but I mean, that's a part of, like, the Greek mythology, right?
Yeah.
And I just kind of, I really do fucking love this show. Like, it is one of those things where it's like, by the end of it, it ends at a point where you understand, like, it is actually a natural ending point, but where it leaves it and where it leaves its characters are, it's such a gut punch. It honestly, it's the way that I felt the first season of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Like that whole,
like, how does this exist and how is it actually this good?
Yeah.
You know,
like, no, that's exactly what it is. So much so that I'm going to probably go back to watch It's the End of the Fucking World, because I just kind of need that sort of tone that she deals with. Like, yeah. the kind of, like, the darkest of dark humors mixed in with, like, clever drama, because it's very clever, like, and it's cleverly constructed. And it just, like, it's basically just using Greek mythology, but just modernizing.
Yeah.
And I feel like as soon as people get what they're like, as soon as certain people see this and they lose their shit for it, because I feel like they are, it's going to be you. OK, you know what this is? This is Stranger Things for the first 3 months. Do you remember what happened?
Yeah.
Like, it was like a secret between all of us that saw it. We're like, how the fuck is this show? Man, it's great that we had this one season of this show. It's never going to be a huge hit. Man, this guy David Harbour is great. Like, these kids are great. Fucking Winona's back. It's kind of great. It's like this. And nobody was talking about it for that first, like, 2 or 3 months, right? Like, 2 months. And then it hit. Then everybody started watching. I feel like chaos is bad. Like, it's going to be that thing where it's like, nobody's going to really, really, really talk about it. And then all of a sudden you're going to start seeing the memes and the gifs of everybody in this show. Like, you know, especially Goldblum. Yeah, it's kind of special, and I can't wait for you to finish it so we can actually have the full season one talking. Yeah. And by the way, Umbrella Academy, man, I am not. I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm gonna have to push through it, man.
A lot of people did not like this last season, and I will say this: it was very. I might have said this when I talked about it with. Without spoilers stuff, it was up and down for me. Like, it was uneven, but I thought the ending was very good.
Okay, so they do. So do they land the ending? Because at this point,
I think right now, so. A lot of people do not think so. I think so.
Okay, because okay, so like, here's the thing: season three where they got stuck in the past, or was that season two?
Three.
Yeah, season two. No, or
was it two?
What season is this? This is season four.
So two then. I keep thinking that there's five seasons.
No, there's okay. So season two. It feels like it starts off like season two, where
last year was the Sparrow Academy. So yeah, season two is where they get stuck in the past.
Okay, so season two is the season that I dislike the most, because the first four episodes feel like fucking just nothing happens. And I don't know why. And then all of a sudden it starts coalescing, and then the ending lands in a good way. And
yeah, I feel like this is on par with that.
Okay. Okay. So I'm just kind of like, okay, so I just have to trudge through it, because like after season three, because season three was so fucking good, like good in a way that I feel like season one and three are great, and it almost makes me want to feel like the evens and the odds, so maybe have another season and end it. But like my thing was this because like, and this is probably the reason why this happened, was we watched the last two episodes of season three because it had been it had been a while. I mean, it had been 2 years since we like it was released. So like, as a we don't like the recaps because the recaps really don't help in any way or regard. So we went back and watched the last two episodes of season three, and then went into season four. And man, it was like a lead brick, bro. It was like a lead brick. I was like, what the fuck happened here? Where is
it? All the momentum is gone because it does a time jump. So like, you just get the like, oh, this is where they're at now. And they're kind of just like all, and it is a few episodes of them like more or less like settled into these lives and how things start like bleeding back over and kind of ramping back up. And so it is like, and it's also a shorter season. So it is like four episodes of like building up to something. And I will say that's something is not, it's not as big as I hoped it would be, but like in the end, I think the payoff is worth it. So,
okay.
I thought it had a great ending. But yeah, it is. I do understand why people had a lot of trouble with it. Completely understand why it's a slog for you. So yeah, I mean when you get there, you get there.
Well, the funniest part was I was telling you, I was like, our plan was to go back and forth between the two episodes, like kind of like what you do, right? Like I thought that Umbrella Academy was going to be a slog, and I thought Chaos was going to be like this effervescent thing, because the trailer betrays the show.
You don't think it's going to be this dark, like dramatic, like pull in that it is. And then by the end of episode two, I was like, God, I wish I didn't have to go to like, I'm exhausted. There's no way I'm going to make it through six more episodes of this, but this is fascinating.
Absolutely. And it just hooked us. Like, it literally hooked us in where I was like, you want to do Umbrella Academy? You want to do Chaos? And we were just like, what's Chaos?
Chaos for sure. Chaos.
Yeah. Wow. And so, like, and I mean, like, and also, it's kind of like, I like, it's weird because, like, I'm weird with TV show endings, with the exception of ones that could be ruined for me. I kind of like, oh man, I don't know if I want this to end. Like, it took me a year to watch the Better Call Saul finales.
Yeah.
It took me 2 years to watch the Breaking Bad season. And it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, you kind of like, you get enraptured in a story and you don't want it to end. So you take your sweet ass time with it. But with this,
it's also this worry of like, they're like, it's so hard to end a show. You're going to fucking botch it. Like, they do all the time. But like, Breaking Bad, I thought very good, very fitting ending. A Better Call Saul, fucking brilliant.
Brilliant. Jesus Christ, brilliant.
I don't think this is at that level, but I do think it's the ending the show like deserves, needs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's perfect for this show.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So. That makes sense. And like I said, I'm not going to not finish it. It's just like, this show, like, Chaos got in the way, and that should actually speak to the quality of...
Chaos is a lot more, involved, and, like, it's something to get excited about. Like, whereas Umbrella Academy, I enjoyed it, but I also don't think it's, like, that last season, I don't think it's anything to get excited about outside of the fact that this is it. This is the finale. So let's get into Beetlejuice, because I really, really want to talk about this movie. All right, so we both saw Beetlejuice yesterday. Real quickly, I have a slight fondness for the original Beetlejuice. I haven't watched it in probably decades, so I should probably revisit it. I remember enjoying it when I was younger, But also, I never understood the absolute love that a lot of people have for that movie. Because I just thought it was, like, fine. You know, fine Tim Burton stuff. Like, what's your relationship with Beetlejuice?
It's probably, other than Ed Wood and Batman Returns, it might be my favorite of his. Like, I'm a guy who, like, along with my wife, like, we're both Beetlejuice heads. Like, it's one of my comfort movies. Like, you know, like we've talked about comfort movies and like things that you go to sleep to and stuff. And it's, I don't know what it is. It's just something comforting about it. I didn't realize I hate to call them my eccentricities come from like Burton's stuff and like things like my overwhelming love of Catherine O'Hara comes from this movie, like comes from the original Beetlejuice, right? The weird afterlife stuff. It's all kind of very, for me, it's very comforting. And then of course, like Michael Keaton, I love Michael Keaton. Like, I don't know if I've ever said this on the show, but Michael Keaton, like when I was a kid, there was Harrison Ford. And then there was Michael Keaton. Like Michael Keaton to me was the fucking coolest dude in the world. Like even before he played Batman, he was fucking Mr. Mom. He was in Gung Ho. Like he was the dude that saved a town in Gung Ho. Right. Yeah. Like, minus the fact that Gung Ho is now very culturally inappropriate, like, when no more Twisted Sister. But at the time in the era, it was kind of like this really kind of great, like, you know, like working class movie, right? And so, and then Beetlejuice is just like, I don't know, man, like, he's fucking great. Like him and Beetlejuice is just kind of like something else. So, like, I am personally a super fan. Like me and my wife, I mean, it's something that we bonded over when we first started dating, was our love of Beetlejuice. Like it's like the stupid, like going back to Breaking Bad. It's the stupid relationship between Jesse and I can't think of her name, the one that would eventually become Jessica Jones. And he was like, yeah. I got this black screen TV. I mean, like literally, it's like you just transpose the blue screen to Beetlejuice and us watching it, and instead of having like stupid lawn chairs, we actually had a love seat. It was just kind of like us watching it, right? One of our first dates was probably watching Beetlejuice, and so we have a lot of affection for it. That's where I stand.
I really, really want to go back and watch the original movie. I may try to do it in between football games this weekend. I want to see how I feel about it now. So. Okay. Because, like, I remember the plot of the movie, you know, them moving into the house, like, the death of the Maitlands, I remember all of that. But, like, there's no bit in that movie that really kind of sticks out. Like, there's no quotes, there's no, like, I just remember the movie, but there's no scenes or anything that really stick out. The thing that I remember most about Beetlejuice is the look of Beetlejuice, like of the movie, of the afterlife, like the effects work, like all of that stuff. That to me is when I was younger and watching it, that was the fascinating thing.
The world building.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah. I mean, like that's so ultimately the movie is like this weird early era, beautiful, world building that doesn't feel like world building, like because of the way that the story is told about two people that are just entering into the afterlife, and there's so much that's inferred and never implicitly stated, which is kind of like beautiful. Like it kind of like, you know how like I was telling you, Die Hard set the tone for me of like what I like in an adventure film or an action film or something big. Like, Beetlejuice set the tone for me of, like, how I like world building. I don't want you to tell me the things, but I want you to guide me through the world. And Beetlejuice is very much so a guided tour of the afterlife, if that makes any sense. In a very brief, very, like, surfacely sort of way.
So you when saw Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice with your wife, what did you think?
I'm still processing a lot of it, but ultimately, I feel like it's a worthy sequel. Now, where I fall in how much I love it and how much I'll rewatch it, I don't know. Because it feels like an expansion of the Beetlejuice world, and it definitely feels like Tim Burton. Like, this is a Tim Burton movie, like, with a capital T and a capital B, right? Like, where, and I think that my reaction right now is just because, like, I really, really like this film. But I feel like it's because the last thing I saw from Tim Burton that also started, like, that was also, oddly enough, starring Jenna Ortega, and we will get to the Jenna Ortega of things because I have probably a hot take on this, was Wednesday, that didn't feel anything like a fucking Tim Burton movie.
Everybody went nuts for that show, and like I watched it, and I didn't hate it, but I like there was nothing in that show that like set a fire under me, and like I really hoped that Beetlejuice would like kind of bring me back to Tim Burton, because I think I've completely fallen. Like, he's fallen completely out of favor with me. Like, outside of one film, like, mm-hmm. I could never watch another Tim Burton movie again for the rest of my life, I think. Even though I do want to rewatch Beetlejuice. I think Big Fish is a fucking masterpiece. And outside of that, I'm just like, yeah, I don't care anymore, man.
You know what it is for me? It was that it wasn't the handmade quality of the best of Burton's films that he's gotten away from, that I feel like Beetlejuice feels more like a handmade film. Like, I think that what people forget is that Beetlejuice is a very jaunty movie. Like, the one thing that you'll remember, like, when you go back to it and you watch it, it's a very kind of awkward film because it's awkwardly made. It's made by a guy, like, it feels singularly Tim Burton. And I feel like what they allowed him to do with this movie is make it handcrafted. It doesn't feel like a CGI show. Like, that's what I appreciated so much about this, is that.
So, yeah, I'll start with positive things about this movie, because I'm just going to be like totally upfront. I don't fucking like this movie. The positive things, like that, I don't know, a tactileness.
Yes.
Is fucking great. Like, everything, even when it looks ridiculous, it feels right. You know, like it's that Harryhausen kind of thing. Like, in Clash of the Titans, all of that shit looks ridiculous, but it also feels right in the movie. So, like,
yes,
all of that afterworld effects, like, all of that stuff, it's great. I love that they stuck with all of that, that they didn't try to CGI it up. And, I mean, I'm sure there's some post-CGI stuff in there somewhere, but, like, it's all practical with, like, enhancements. You know, and that's fucking great. Every second with Michael Keaton in this movie, and I hope he didn't get paid by the minute, because if his paycheck was like per minute, he didn't make any money for this movie, because he's not in this fucking movie.
and that's the other thing about Beetlejuice, the original one, is that
that's what I've heard.
15 minutes. He's only in it 15 minutes, but he feels like he takes the oxygen out of the room, like he does here. Like, whether it's doing a full-on fucking musical number or singing Richard Marx's right there with
you. That was really funny. Like, that was really genuinely funny. When she looks down at the model and he's just got the fucking guitar and singing Richard Marx. That was really funny. I think the I guess we should have said spoilers for Beetlejuice. I think the wedding number goes on way too long though. Like that, I mean, to do the whole fucking song, I was just like, oh my god. Like, it was funny for a few minutes. But yeah, the tactileness of the effects work, like all of that's really good. I think Michael Keaton is great. He needed to be in it more. He really did. I think anytime Michael Keaton isn't in the movie, mostly it's boring. And that's the worst thing for me. Like, I know we reference Madam Web a lot, but Madam Web is a bad movie that isn't boring to me. Like, it is dumb. Fucking stupid, but it's not boring. This is a well-made movie by a guy who knows how to make movies. Like, it looks good. Like, narratively, I think there's some problems, but I'll get into that. But, like, it is made by a guy who knows how to make movies, but it's mostly just boring as shit to me. Like,
okay.
I didn't care about, like, the smarmy dude that's trying to play stepdad. Like, I saw through all of that from the jump, which I don't think we're not supposed to, but like,
yeah,
that to me, that makes his character pointless. Why you bring like this classic beautiful actress into the world of Beetlejuice to have her barely in it, and a plot that you didn't need, this whole Beetlejuice's ex-wife thing. Like, if that wasn't going to be the focus of the movie, then it's excise. That's too much. The whole movie, despite me finding it mostly boring, it's also too much. There's too much going on. There's the shitty producer boyfriend trying to be play stepdad and steal the money. There's the death of Jeffrey Jones's character and like that whole thing. There's the mother-daughter relationship that's fallen apart. So she winds up finding refuge with this boy who's actually, oh, wait, he's dead. And the serial killer. And then there's Beetlejuice wanting to still marry Lydia. And it's like, do you see what I mean? Like, there's so many subplots for a movie that doesn't need that many subplots. Like, if you just have the death of Jeffrey Jones, which I understand you have to do, and I think what they do with that is really interesting, although they still find a way to keep showing his face, which I think means you have to pay him money. So that's weird, but yeah,
especially for a man who is a convicted child pedophile, was a pedophile.
So it's weird that you just keep finding ways to show his face, but that's beside the point. I enjoy like that they do that whole subplot. Oh, and then you have the dead dad subplot too.
Yes.
But like, to me, like if you just pare it down to it, to the grandfather dies, they come back to the house to have the funeral, they do this whole thing, they have this estranged mother-daughter estranged relationship, and she seeks, you know, finds this kid, falls in love with him, gets sucked into the afterlife, he's a serial killer trying to swap souls with her, and then you need Beetlejuice to help you get to that's the only plot you need. You didn't need Beetlejuice's ex-wife. We ain't even talked about the what's his name as the actor cop thing, which is fun. It's incredibly fun, but it's also completely unnecessary, and he doesn't really do a whole lot.
No, he doesn't. No. I was just waiting for you. No, he doesn't. I feel like the film suffers from, like you said, it being overstuffed. But I feel like it was maybe two things overstuffed rather than leaning it down. I didn't mind the Beetlejuice stuff, because ultimately it's about expanding the universe, right? Like, it's like, ultimately it's about making some of the stuff a little bit more, like giving us more in the afterlife. And I felt like I didn't necessarily agree with some of the ways that they went about it, but I liked the end result. Like, I didn't, like, I kind of love, like, you know, Beetlejuice X's ex-wife, and the whole purpose of it being like telling Beetlejuice's origin story without telling his origin story, but absolutely having, like, you know, Michael Keaton go into this whole thing where, you know, like an Italian, like it's like an Italian, an old Italian horror film, right? I feel like the weakest link, and this is the thing, like the two weakest links are Justin Theroux's like TV producer character. It's like, like, how many times do we need Justin Theroux to do Swarm? And I know it's shorthand, but at the same time, I'm like, there is no way like Lydia would end up with a dude like that. I mean, she
I don't know how she's fallen for this guy and his dumb shit.
Well, even like we're not given enough about Astrid's father to go like, okay, like they kind of shared a horror thing, but we,
it doesn't make that reunion heartfelt to me.
Like, no, it does not. But I feel like that does not fall on Winona Ryder. It does not fall on Santiago Cabrera. It solely falls on Jenna Ortega. And I'm going to make a hot take, which is I do not like Jenna Ortega as an actress. She just doesn't work for me. Nothing she does works for me. It's flat, flat, flat. She's the reason why I don't like Scream. Like the the new Screams. Don't like it because of her. She doesn't work. You know what? And it wasn't until this movie that I really zeroed in on the fact that the weakest link in this movie is her character, and it's how she portrays it, and it's how they write her. Like, I understand the purpose of her, and I understand why they did it, but Astrid, because of Jenna Ortega, just falls flat. Like, Jenna Ortega's, like, whole, like, monotone, like, let's not do anything, like, let's not show any kind of emotion, or when I do, it just doesn't work. It does not work for me. Like, it really doesn't. And I think it's also because, like, okay, so, like, here's
the thing. Is it because you've seen it done better by actresses like Winona Ryder?
Yes, that is totally the thing. But also, it also goes back to whenever she's in a movie. Like, I'll give you Scream as an example. Melissa Barrera acts fucking circles around this
girl. Yeah, I agree.
Like, Melissa Barrera, like, the saddest part about the entire Scream franchise is they should have killed Jenna Ortega's character in the first film and had Melissa Barrera take over, because she's the better actress. And that's the more shocking thing to do in Scream. And it's part of the reason, I think it's part of the reason why I, like, people were telling me, Scream, 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 it's great, 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 great.
I enjoy it, but I see, like, those issues.
Yeah, and it was, like, the entire time I'm watching it, I'm going, man, did they cast Jenna Ortega because of the fact that they're, like, I'm like, are they doing it because they're gonna kill her? Because that would be the ultimate thing for me. I was like, and I was getting myself hyped. Because I was like, she's kind of a bad actress as compared to Barrera. I was like, who is this Barrera girl? Like, I don't know her, or this Barrera lady. And it just all builds up to nothing. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so, like, and like you said, like, the actresses that have done it better, like, and all she does is... and Winona Ryder. Seriously.
Like, and so, you, like, had her play a version of Christina Ricci's Wednesday. And then you had her play basically a version of Winona Ryder's character from Beetlejuice, Lydia. And she doesn't do a good job at either one of those things.
No. And
it's a pale imitation of what we've seen done exceptionally well. And so, 100%. Like, I agree with you. Like, she doesn't sell any of the stuff that's happening.
She doesn't help in any way, shape, or form. No. And Winona Ryder is there, like, her and Catherine O'Hara are like the MVP.
Catherine O'Hara is fucking like the thing with the asps was fucking
why?
Like that got a big chuckle out of me when she lifted him up. I was like, she's about to die.
Yep. Like, you know, in continuing like her, like just she's like here's the weirdest part about Catherine O'Hara is like for some of us, she's a god. For other people, she's meh. But if she was a dude, she would be known in the same breath as John Candy or John Belushi, like a comic great. Not to say that she died, but I'm just trying to like give you an example of like how good
I agree. She's very, very like she's always good and always doing exactly what she's supposed to be doing, you know, like as an actress in this character. Like she understands the characters that she's playing, whether that's because she's a great actress or because she only chooses roles that she really understands what they're doing. But like it's really difficult. Like, despite not ever really changing her, like, inflection, like, the way she speaks, the mom from Home Alone is the stepmom from Beetlejuice is the lady that's in all those,
Christopher Guest.
The Guest Christopher movies. Yeah.
Yeah, Christopher Guest.
Those are that's the in same Creek. Fucking people. I've never seen, I watched 10 minutes of Schitt's Creek, the first episode. It didn't pull me in, so I never watched anymore. I know I should like get into it, but I never did. But that's the same actress. Like,
yeah.
And you never associate those characters with each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
She's fucking great. She's great. And the funniest scene in the movie, and I think it's either edited badly or like, cause it, maybe it's just the audience I was with. Cause I was in a pretty packed theater. Maybe it got a laugh at your theater, but so there's the scene where she calls Lydia or she keeps calling her and Lydia calls her back and tells her that her dad has died.
Yes.
Which is fucking brutal. Like it's so, but they're talking about having to go tell Astrid and they get in the car and they're driving to go tell Astrid. And, Catherine O'Hara is like, I'm going to tell her like, you know, and she builds it up and then it literally just cuts to Astrid in her dorm room. And, Catherine O'Hara's outside screaming her name.
Yes.
Until she comes hilarious. To the window and she's like, yes. Your grandfather is dead. And
dead.
Like making this giant production of it. It's so ridiculous and so funny. But like also like this is not how you fucking tell somebody that their grandfather died. Like it's so perfectly played by her that like I was like, nobody in my theater was laughing. I was like, this might be the best scene in the movie. Certainly by that point it was. I know that's only like 10 minutes in, but I was like, this is great, man. Like more of this.
I appreciated the choices that they made. Like, I know like, as a whole, like I said, like I really did love the film. It's an overstuffed film, but I feel like I know this is going to sound weird, but I feel like there's not going to like even with the success, I don't think Burton wants to make a third film. So he just packed in all the ideas for like three films, because if you take them all each as their own, they could be their own Beetlejuice movie.
I mean, and realistically, I was sitting there watching it going like, we could have just done a Beetlejuice like mini series and had this be like six episodes and explore all of this to a degree that isn't like seems so like the ex-wife stuff is so tacked on to me. Like there's no,
I think
there like is something perfect. There, but it doesn't go anywhere.
It does not go anywhere. Like, I will give you that. It doesn't go anywhere other than to have an extra person at the end to solve a certain situation. But I love the fact that we find out that Beetlejuice is a grave robber. And it was like 700
years ago. That's a great scene. I don't have a problem with the scenes or that would be part of the plot. It's just that, like, there's also so much other stuff going on. Like, if you wanted that, like, then excise some of the other plots. Like, you could lose the Astrid subplot and have, like, Beetlejuice needing to get married again to avoid. I feel like you could go somewhere else. Or maybe don't lose the Astrid subplot. Lose the douchebag producer subplot. I just feel like there's places you could go that you didn't have to short shrift, like, excise something to give this more room to breathe.
It's one plot too much.
I think it's two plots too much, but that's me.
I feel like if you get rid of the producer, it lightens everything up, because that's such a fucking, like, not to say that Justin Theroux isn't great, but it just doesn't, like, it's the thing that doesn't work for me. I'm like,
it's definitely the thing in the movie that, like, didn't need to be there at all, because it doesn't do anything except further drive the mother-daughter, like, drive them apart, and you don't necessarily need his character to drive them apart. Like, there's plenty of other stuff there. Like, the death of, like, her parents got divorced, her dad went off to save the world and died. Like, that's enough right there.
Yes.
To drive them apart.
Yeah.
You don't need something else.
No, absolutely. And to be perfectly honest, you know, let's just not cast like you made a mention of something. Like, if you aged up Winona Ryder just a little bit, we could have had Christina Ricci be your daughter. Just saying. Because Christina Ricci's in her like 40s, like Winona Ryder is closer to 60 than we possibly realize. So we could possibly have done something like that. We're just not, like, I'm like I said, I feel like the Jenna Ortega of it all ruins it for me. Like, that whole plot line is ruined by her, because I just don't believe she's a deece in any way, shape, or form. Like, it doesn't feel like organic. And it's like, it's not even just the way that she performs it. It's just the way that she's written. It just doesn't, like, I don't get it.
I feel, so to your point, so if you're, instead of Jenna Ortega, like, what if it was Selena Gomez?
You know, that might work.
Because I feel like Selena Gomez can also do that. Very much Only Murders in, like, she's deadpanning everything, like,
yeah,
and it works. Like, I don't think she's bad. So
no, she's not.
I
think that would have been a better. I absolutely.
And she's better. She's 32. So yeah. I mean, you have to age up. Well, you have to make Winona Ryder's character more like her actual age, and maybe age down Selena Gomez a little bit. But you couldn't do the, like, in the prep school, like, you lose some of that plot, I guess. So like, her being in the school and all that stuff, but
why do you need that? Like, honestly, why do you need that?
For that, like, one scene where Catherine screaming her name.
But you could do that any place.
You're right. She could have been a teacher at the school. Like, that works too. So
there's so many different ways that it could have been approached, but ultimately it's like, Mike, my ultimate issue more than anything is that, like, I think it's like, we're on the same page, but like, I like the movie more, which is that it's overstuffed. And I feel like this is what happens when you get somebody like Burton, when you finally convince him to do the movie, like you finally convince him to do something with it. This is what happens, is that he doesn't want to go back to it. So what does he do? He makes an overly stuffed movie with all the things that he wants to say. Like, it's almost like he was like, man, I should have made two additional Beetlejuice movies. Like one in like 94, right after Batman Returns, and another one in 2001 or 2002. But he never got to. And so like, these are the remnants of the ideas. Like, one could have been called The Wife of Beetlejuice. Yeah,
that's Bride of Beetlejuice. The Bride of Beetlejuice was a great fucking name. And that's exactly what it feels like. It's like there were lots of, and we actually know there have been lots of Beetlejuice sequel scripts. And so it feels like
Kevin Smith.
A lot of pieces of those scripts like crammed into one thing. And if I didn't also find it unbearably boring for 30-40% of its runtime, like, how are you overstuffed and also boring? Like, and again, I know this is not exactly your experience, it was just mine, but like, I was pretty fucking bored for the first like 30 minutes of this movie. And that's just not, it sucks, man. Like,
no, absolutely.
It's what makes me want to, like, if I go back and watch Beetlejuice, the first one, am I going to feel the same way? Like, I pulled up Tim Burton. I was like, you know, what's the last Tim Burton movie that I actually enjoyed? And what's the last one I truly, truly loved? The last Tim Burton movie I loved was 20 fucking years ago, Big Fish. And, like, I think the last one I kind of sort of enjoyed, I didn't see Corpse Bride, so I can't really even speak to that. I'm trying to think. I didn't see Dumbo, but Dumbo didn't look.
Was the last thing that I loved, like, which outright. Frankenweenie.
Oh, I didn't see Frankenweenie either.
The stop motion one. It's on Disney Plus. It's really good. Like, especially if you liked the original short, and like, I think that it might be your like. If you like,
I thought Sweeney Todd was okay.
Sweeney Todd was great. But I'm also a huge fan of that musical. I think that you're right. Like, it's like the last like big one was Big Fish, and then there's minor ones like Sweeney Todd. I have a fondness for Dark Shadows just because it's so. It's both much Tim Burton and also Tim Burton making fun of himself. And then Frankenweenie is just pure love of like they do something like, I don't know how to describe it, but it's this, like, I always have a soft spot in my heart for like movies about like kids and their dogs. But this one is especially so, I think, because it's black and white. It's got the whole horror film infused into it, and it's like, it both honors but also expands on the original short, which I also love. So I would actually say, like, yeah, give Beetlejuice a retry, but maybe check out Frankenweenie and just be prepared to get a little teary-eyed, because it's kind of a great thing. But after that, like, Big Eyes, Miss Peregrine's Home for Particular Children, Dumbo. Oh, Jesus Christ, Dumbo. Don't even get me started. It's like he's like, I don't know, like, he's a little lost. He's a little lost in this whole.
Well, that's what I hoped. I hoped that this was like rediscover. And he talked about it like it was like rediscovering part of himself. Like, and I do think there's some of that in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially like the tactile, like, the effects work.
Mm-hmm.
But like, there's so much other stuff that I'm just like, what the fuck is this? Like, why are you beholden to these things in this script? And it's just like, I think Willem Dafoe does a fantastic job, but he has like three scenes. And he's fun and funny, but like there's not enough there for me to really enjoy it. And so like I wanted more of it or it to be gone. You know what I mean? Like either not be there or give me more of it. Because it is enjoyable, but like there's so little there, you know? It's like if somebody was like, do you want a piece of cheesecake? And you're like, fuck yeah, I love cheesecake. And then they give you like a
layer of cheesecake?
No, like just the tiniest bit of cheesecake.
Oh, okay.
And it's like, you said a piece of cheesecake. This is a bite of cheesecake. I want a piece of cheesecake.
Dirt version of cheesecake. You want the whole cheesecake. You don't. Yes. You want the whole York style cheesecake. You don't want an hors d'oeuvre version of it. You want the entire fucking cheesecake. Okay, I get you. I get it. Also, like, I'm not saying that this is the case and the reason why Monica Bellucci's in it, but you do know that
they filmed in France.
I don't know.
That they filmed in France?
No. That's Tim Burton's new boot thing.
Oh, is it?
I don't know how he bagged her, but like, yeah. They've been dating since before Beetlejuice. And like she's talked glowingly about him. Like, he's an artist. He is wonderful. He is the best thing that's happened to me other than my kids. Like, literally, like I'm in love with this dude. I mean, one of the most beautiful women in the world. Like, and Tim Burton. And like, so, like, of course he's going to, like, cast her as, like, basically Sally 2.0. Like, that's the one thing that I did notice was that he really leaned into the whole Sally Nightmare Before Christmas, like,
yeah,
like, of her. Like, the way that she's, like, instead of stitched, she's stapled, I know. But, like, the way that she's constructed, it's very much so Bride of Frankenstein, a.k.a. Sally from, like, you know, Nightmare Before Christmas. Which is oddly enough voiced by Catherine O'Hara. But you know that that's probably the reason why, like, you know, cast, like, we need somebody to be cast as Beetlejuice's wife. Well, I have an idea. And since she's Italian, that leads into my whole Mario Bava old school.
Oh, yeah.
It kind of all makes sense in the way that if you think like Tim Burton might think, this is the production of this, right? It's like, of course he's going to use, like, of course he's gotten a taste for musicals, and of course he's going to use Sondheim musical numbers. It's just, it seems so weird to use it at the end of a Beetlejuice movie. Like, I loved the soul, like, the whole disco-ness of it, because it's in place of, like, if you think about it, the Calypso music,
yeah.
Like, if you, in 88, 40 years ago, 48, would have been Calypso music would have been like the height of things, right? 40 years later, in like, you know, like literally almost 40 years later in 2024, you do that again, you do 40 years later, that's 74. That's around the time that disco was huge. So it makes sense to me the way that the thought process has worked. It just hasn't settled. Like, for me, the movie hasn't settled in the comfort of 30 years of rewatching it and not. And
right.
Getting accustomed to all the bumps in the road. Like, if you watch the first movie, the first thing that you go is like, okay, why the fuck Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis? Like, it doesn't make sense in the world, but then it absolutely does when you're watched it 35 times or 100 times. Like, I don't know. Like, it's one of those movies that I want to see more times before I fully make an opinion, but I definitely can agree with you that it is so overstuffed. It I know we're saying like it's two plots too many. I think it has like seven plots too many. Like, if I'm honest with myself, because it just, all of it is just so much, right? And it's all in service to, once you get that set up going into the afterlife, but also expanding on the afterlife, because there's a lot more in the afterlife now that we're seeing that wasn't in the first movie.
Yeah.
And again,
like, you do get to see a lot of that. And yes. I appreciated all of that. Like, there's a, lot of things I really did appreciate about the movie, even if I didn't enjoy the movie. And if this brings Burton back to like some of that style of like bizarre filmmaking, like even if it's something that I'm not gonna like I don't love Edward Scissorhands, but it's a very interesting movie.
Yes. Yeah,
like,
I'm not, this weird
exploration of like bizarre ideas, you know? Yeah. And Burton's kind of lost that, and like if it brings him back to that, then great. Then it's a good like first step, and like it'll be interesting to see where they go from here. If this movie is actually like a giant like success, like a runaway, I mean, it won't do Wolverine, Deadpool Wolverine stuff, but like, you know, if it keeps like pulling in numbers week after week, the studio will put a lot of pressure on him to make another one. So, and it seems like everybody had a good time making it. So,
yeah, well, it's projected to make somewhere between $90 to $115 million this weekend. And considering the heat wave that most of the West Coast is going over, like our showing was sold out. I'm talking about
my theater was pretty packed, and the theater I go to is never that packed. So,
Go ahead.
I was gonna say we didn't talk about Arthur Conti. I wanted to bring him up real quick. Who plays the kid? This is like he's been in one other thing, which was like a scene in House of the Dragon. Like that's it. This is his first thing, and despite like there's not a lot there, I do think he does a very good job. Like I think he's really good. Like
he is. Like
enough that like I was sure I'd seen him in something else. I was like I know I've seen this kid in something.
Like my like okay, so like my thing is that I like most of the time I dislike male actors, young male actors until they get into their 30s because they're just so just kind of stupidly fucking I don't know. But this kid is instantly likable. Like he's like he had the stupid mop haircut, but he still like manages to eschew all of that and be likable and charming. And here's the thing that I'm very surprised by is he makes Jenna Ortega better.
Like, yeah, I think their scenes together are pretty good.
Yes. Like they have it's a weird thing because it's like Burton, like when I saw him and her together and the whole navel gazing stuff, the whole romance, I'm like, this is Tim Burton wanting to make a teenage romance, but not knowing how to do that traditionally. So he just stuffed it into a Beetlejuice movie because it's very kind of Garden State-y, like in the attic with music from the 90s.
I think like, if the movie had been more of that, and like then you get that twist, like it was happening so quick that the minute she like agreed to like come hang out with him, I was like there's some twist, there's a twist here, because like everything's happening so fast. And but I think if you like really dig in, eschew some of that other stuff, like and just focus on that for a bigger portion of the movie, like I think it would be more effective, you know. And maybe that's not the movie he was making, and maybe I'm just trying to rewrite it, but I wanted more of that, you know. And that turn would feel really like you would feel that betrayal, you know. But she falls for him like so quickly, and I was just like, this is all moving too fast, there's something else going on here. I was like, I was pretty sure he was dead, but I was like, there's a reason you didn't see his parents' faces, like I don't know what's going on there.
I kind of, like, we all kind of instantly called it. It was like, oh, yeah, I think that
I didn't think he was a serial killer.
No, I didn't think he was a serial killer.
Or family murderer, whatever you want to call it. But, yeah, I definitely knew that there was, like, some kind of twist there. But I think he's really, really good. Like I said, the whole time I was just like, I've seen this guy in something. And I looked him up, I was like, yeah, like one scene in a House of the Dragon episode. This is his first, like, major thing. He's pretty fucking good. And I could see him, you know, if Burton does become, you know, a little bit more prolific in his output, like, I think he's probably a new Tim Burton player.
Definitely. I have this, both this fear and this dream that I think that I know what's going to happen with Burton post this, after he finishes up, because they're right in the middle of filming Wednesday, and he directs, like, literally 5 or 6 of the episodes of season 2. But my thing is that I think that it's going to be a repeat of what happened in 88. Which is that this is going to be a huge hit. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's going to be Warner Brothers. I feel like with that, with Keaton's ascent, reascent to, like, stardom, and, like, side note about Michael Keaton, like, I don't know if a lot of people understand why he went away for a long time, but I'm going to tell you guys, and this is the kind of dude that Michael Keaton is, and this is why he always will have my dollars, is the reason why he went away for so long and didn't come back until Birdman, only starring in a few occasional things, was that his wife was diagnosed with cancer. And instead of staying in Hollywood, he made enough money, he went back, and he helped his wife, and he had kids, and so when his wife tragically died, because they thought that it was gone and then it came back and she ended up passing, he took the mantle of raising his kids, not raising them Hollywood style. He literally went back to Pittsburgh or went back to Pennsylvania and raised his children with them. Here's the even shittier part, is that after he finishes raising them, they go off to college. He meets this woman, just a normal woman, and starts dating her, falls in love. And then she gets cancer. And then he has to, like, he cares for her until the rest of, well, she finishes the rest of life. And after she finishes, like, he's decimated. And his kids basically come back to him and say, Dad, you got to do something. You got to work or do something. He's like, go back to something that you love. And he literally went back to acting. And, like, to hear that at the root of everything, like, that makes me a Michael Keaton fan, like, even more. But I feel like what's going to happen, like, all that being said, like, Burton was there for all of it, from what I understood. Like, they've been best friends since Beetlejuice, right? They've known each other, like personal, close friends. I have this weird fucking feeling that if this is a hit, that Keaton may, like, they may do another Batman film.
That would be bizarre, man. Absolutely. I mean, we're gonna have, like, 5 different Batmans on screen at the same time.
But think about this. That is something that James Gunn would fucking love to do. Like, he's all about the extracurricular story behind things. Like, even if you just barely, like follow him on social media, he is all about, like, the history and the story. And imagine, because Batwoman or Batgirl
got canceled,
imagine through the ashes of that they announced Tim Burton is coming back for his final Batman movie to complete his trilogy the way that he wants to do it. He's bringing Michael Keaton along with him. He's bringing Michelle Pfeiffer along with him. And I don't know, like, they do whatever they're going to do. And he's going to get to make the final movie that he wanted to make.
Like, I mean, people would show up for it.
Yeah. People would lose their fucking mind. Like, Keaton getting to play Batman again one more time. I mean, even though he's played Batman, he played Batman in the movie that's Persona Non Grata. We're not going to talk about that one. And he's the best part of that movie. But imagine like, I don't know, like, I have this weird feeling that that may actually happen. Because legacy sequels, right? Like, if this makes a whole bunch of money, like, it makes $300 million at the box office, or like, half a billion worldwide, you know that they're going to want to get back into the Tim Burton business. They're not going to they're not, like, Warner's is in desperate need. And what does Warner Brothers know? They know that, like, they're like, let's just throw the DC at them. And I don't know, like you get your, like, Burton's in this, like, mode where, like, if you read in articles, like, he's fallen back in love with filmmaking. But not only that, he's okay. Like, he was like, I didn't mind going back to the Beetlejuice world. I wonder if you throw the concept of him, I'm going to give you $150 million to do whatever you want with Batman. And you have Keaton and you can cast whatever you want. Like, they kind of did with this. From everything I understood, they gave him carte blanche to do whatever he wanted. And this is his film. Right? Like, for better or for worse, this is the movie he wanted. If you do the same thing for Batman, does he come back? And also, does he come back and what does he do? Does he bring Damon Wayans with him? Or Marlon Wayans with him? To do Nightwing? to do something fucking crazy like that and correct course ills? That would be wild. But not unexpected, right? Like, that's the whole thing to me is, like, it's not unexpected.
Honestly hope he does, like, that. It does sound wild and something he would be down for, but, like, I know that like Big Fish is an adaptation, but, like, it's not him playing in somebody else's world. Like, Planet of the Apes is him doing, like, some version of some other thing, and Batman, like, do something more original. Like, I know he's done a lot of mostly adaptations, but, like,
yes,
people are doing those things. Like, if you're gonna adapt something you haven't adapted before that other people haven't adapted, and put your spin on it, you know? Like, I want to see him. I mean Big Fish is my favorite movie, but, like, Corpse Bride and You Say Frankenweenie and Nightmare Before Christmas, like, those are, like, some of his most beloved things. And I know he didn't direct Nightmare, but, like, that's his story. And I don't know, like, I want to see him, like, do that kind of, like, his original stuff.
I know what he could do. And I think that everybody would agree that it would be the perfect thing for him to fucking do. And he'd probably end up winning his Oscars for it. An accompaniment to Ed Wood, make Vincent Price.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
Like, make the autobiography. Like, if there's anybody that deserves to make the autobiography of Vincent Price, it's Tim.
100%.
100%. Like, imagine?
Ed Wood is one of his most beloved films. And again, I know it's him telling somebody else's story, but it is that original, like, his vision of, you know, and I want to see him do more stuff like that. And I mean, Beetlejuice is kind of that, even though I think the movie's an absolute mess and I did not ultimately enjoy it, but I can appreciate it that it isn't fucking Tim Burton doing Alice in Wonderland or Dumbo or, you know what I mean? So
no, absolutely. Like, I feel like it would complete his, like, black and white trilogy, because he started with Ed Wood, did Frankenweenie, and then if you do Vincent, you have to do it in black and white.
Oh, 100%.
Like, you know, we were talking about black and white on Chaos, and Chaos has a wonderful black and white scene. But it's like, I would love to see him take on Vincent, and just like it feels like the movie that he was destined to make, right?
Yeah.
Like that would be a great kind of, like, bounce back after Beetlejuice, like a creative kind of, like, deep dive into something, like, heartfelt.
And I think you're right. Like, done, like, to the degree we know he can do, a la, like, Ed Wood, like, he could probably pull his Oscar out. So,
yeah. And then I will be rooting for this Conti kid to be cast as Tim Burton, as a young Tim Burton.
Yeah.
Because calling Gawky, like, all you need to do is give him the glasses and the weird walk, and you got Tim Burton. Like, it took no kind of, like, I was like, this kid was cast because I feel like Burton was casting himself in the role.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Like when you see Johnny Depp and Ed Wood, and then you see Tim Burton, and you're like, so you just cast Johnny Depp as you.
Yeah.
Because that's you, right?
Yep.
So, you know. non-Beetlejuice, and we can end on this. I meant to bring it up before Beetlejuice because it was the one trailer in front of Beetlejuice that I was like, oh what? knew it was coming. Knew the cast. Knew the director. Absolutely not at all fucking interested in a movie about Saturday Night Live. Zero fucking interest. I saw the trailer, though. That's a good fucking trailer.
It's a good trailer, but you know that it's a movie told in real time, right? 90-minute movie.
Yeah.
Everything I've heard, every critical response other than the people that are up their own ass about the 70s and, you know, we're so woke and why can't white guys just say terrible fucking things and do terrible things? Fuck you. But everybody has said, it makes no sense. The movie is just an overstuffed version of a wank, basically.
That sucks. That trailer is fucking, like, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have an anxiety attack watching this trailer.
So, well, they say what gets in the way is the overstuffedness of everything and, like, deciding to do the one day rather than do the whole epic story of it got in the way. Like, really got in the way. And, like, that trailer's super effective. Like, ineffective in a way that I'm like, Jason Reitman has never made a movie that looks like this. I think that it's a trailer thing. I'm not the biggest fan of Jason Reitman. I liked his second
Up and Down.
Up in the Air. Up in the Air. And everything else, I've just been, meh. Like, his internet movie, I was like, okay. That's okay, I guess. Like, things that I've... it was like a... You know which one I'm talking about? Like, I think it's called Friends and Family or whatever it is. It literally is a To Catch a Predator, like, movie. It's not even like a... Like, it doesn't say anything new that I haven't heard on Dateline or Dateline Special. And the rest of it is kind of like...
I enjoyed Afterlife, and so...
Which one is Afterlife?
Ghostbusters. Afterlife.
Oh, yeah, I know. Like, we are very much so the, like, like, you and I are, like, we're opposites on that one, the way that we are on Beetlejuice. Like, I really like Beetlejuice. You're not, I really don't like Afterlife, but you're like, I like it. I like Frozen Kingdom more than I liked Afterlife. Like, I much more liked Frozen Kingdom. But
yeah, I think I think you're right about that. I do think that's a better movie, but, like, I didn't have the problems with Afterlife that a lot of people had. Although I get why they had them. So, like, I'm not going to, like, staunch defender of it. I'm just like, I don't know. I enjoyed it. So.
Yeah. No. And that's, like, you know, ultimately that's the way I feel about Beetlejuice. Like you see, like, I'm not like dying on the hill for it. Like, I see everything that you're talking about. It's not, like I said, it's like, this is definitely fan service of the nth degree, but Beetlejuice is so ingrained in my life and my soul and my blood that I look at it, and even with my whole Jenna Ortega thing, I still am like, but it's a Beetlejuice movie.
Yeah.
Like, it truly feels like a Beetlejuice movie.
I did find plenty to like about it. It's just ultimately, I was just like, but being bored was the ultimate, like, problem. Like, anytime it wasn't Michael Keaton on screen, I was fucking bored.
maybe not go back to Beetlejuice.
But I like those other people. Like,
yes.
Jeffrey Jones being who he is aside, like, that stuff I remember in that movie being, like, ridiculously stupid fun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
no,
so
absolutely.
I might like that more. You know, like, I like the Catherine O'Hara stuff in this movie, but she's not in it a ton. So, But anyway, so yeah, two differing opinions on Beetlejuice. I don't. Does Transformers 1 come out next week?
No, we got.
Okay, so I don't but think I am, I'm going to say anything this week.
Let me actually take a look for you. I know that I have the, like, I'm so hyped for Transformers that I am going to go to the Wednesday fan event for Transformers 1.
And nice.
Can I just talk to you about, like, I didn't realize it until I saw the trailer, how crass it is for them calling it Transformers 1. Like,
yeah,
that's fucking crass. That's bold. That's a fucking bold statement, because we already know what the sequel's going to be called. Transformers 2. But yeah, I'm going to see it on that Wednesday, the Wednesday fan event at 7 p.m. So awesome. I'm genuinely hyped for it. To be honest with you, it's the first time since the first Transformers movie that I'm excited about a Transformers movie before the release. Like, Bumblebee was a surprise because I wasn't looking forward to it. I saw it and I was like, damn, this is a fun movie. Yeah. We've talked ad nauseum about the summer of 2022, and just the unexpectedness of how, like, nice it was to see things like connect in a way that they did, aka Transformers. What was it, Beast Wars? Was it called Beast Wars or Rise of the Beast?
Rise of the Beast,
and how, like, honest to goodness, it was like, wow, that's a fucking Transformers movie. Like a real Transformers movie. So, like, this one, it hasn't been since, like I said, the original one, the original Bay Amblin film, that I was like, you know what? I am very excited about this. Like, it looks like what I kind of want a Transformers movie to be. So, like, I'm excited. I definitely. How about you? Like, I've not asked about that. And I know that you're a huge Transformers guy.
Oh, I'm so the trailers have me excited. Like, it's the first animated Transformers movie in almost 40 years. I'm in for it. I feel like it's an easier, if it's not good, it's an easier pill to swallow.
Yes.
When it's an animated film, you know?
No, you're very, like, that's very right.
God, like, the over, like, just the massive runtimes of the live action shit and the ridiculous plots, and like it just works better in animation, even though there are a few good live action Transformers movies. So yeah, that'll be the next movie I'm seeing. So I'll get to finish Chaos this week and get caught up on Bad Monkey. I think I'm one episode behind, so yeah, well, I don't know. We'll talk about something next week.
We'll figure it out.
Until then, go check out xwingfiles.com for all our other podcasts. Go rate and review us on wherever you're listening to this podcast. I never say that. And go check out our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieowl.com, where you can read my work and Logan's work as we, head into the fall movie season, which means, I don't know what that means for me. I mean, I'm usually on my bullshit all the time. Old movies being released on Blu-ray and 4K, and the occasional big budget movie review, but very rarely so. But we'll be back next week with a lot of with probably a hodgepodge of stuff, which is always the fun thing.
Maybe some football talk.
You guys got saved from our football discussion because we talked 20 minutes.
It happened before we started recording.
Fuck! I should have told you to start recording just so that they had to, like, either fast forward through or listen to us talk about fucking football, because, you know, come on, let's be honest. It's like, We're a football podcast that pretends to be a pop culture podcast. Like, that's not true. And one day I will eventually turn into my nemesis Collinsworth, to which I have to tell you, I literally there was only one time I agreed with Collinsworth, and it only happens once a fucking year, once a year, and it was the toe call, because he called it, like he called it at the same time that I did. I was like, oh, he hit the toe, and Collinsworth said the same thing, and I'm like, my wife looked at me and that's weird, and I'm like, yeah, I know, me and Collinsworth agreed. It's what happens once a year. And then he went back to his ninny ninny nonsense like he always does. Here's a guy. But anyway, we will be back next week.
Alright, yeah, we'll see you guys then. Number 3, Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit. Number 4, Mario. Number 5, Weird Al. Number 6, Batman. Number 7, Kal-El. Number 8, The Simpsons. Number 9, TV. Number 10, every single band that I